Cenk, you're a natural born athlete. Woo!
TYT on a Wednesday, usually anchored solo, going strong, Anna Kasparian, who is on a well-deserved vacation. So here you have me, Francesca Fiorentini, and there you have Wozni Lambre. Big Woz, how are you?
I'm fantastic.
Good, I'm glad. You sort of froze for me, so we'll check in on that for half a second. But otherwise, I think... We have a lot of news to get to. Some updates on Texas, basically trying to.
Man, Kate reached out. It said my internet was unstable.
Is everyone's good? Everything's good? All right,
I'm
cool.
Back.
Okay, cool. Texas is basically trying to like do its own damn thing. They're like, oh yeah, federal immigration law. Screw that. We're gonna go our own way. So that's being litigated currently and going through the courts. A good day if you believe in police accountability. But we'll get into the details out of Mississippi, and they are chilling, and discuss them as well as the origin story of Alina Habba, which. Yes, has to do with a hush money payment for Donald J. Trump. Not directly involving him, but adjacent. So it is a juicy first hour. In the second hour, Cenk is gonna be there with Jordan Yule. So do not fret, some good and familiar faces, but in addition to our faces. So of course, you know what to do, send in your super chats, and we will be reading them throughout the show. But Woz, are you good? Are we Tolo bien? All right, cool.
Yeah, let's, I'm back. I'm okay. Back. We're ready to go.
Okay, all right, let's do this. Let's start here. A Texas law that would effectively defy federal immigration law and deputize all Texas local and state authorities to effectively round up and deport anyone they think is undocumented hangs in the balance today, hours after the Supreme Court's conservative majority allowed it to go into effect. A federal appeals court has now put it back on hold where it had been. This law is known as SB 4. It passed last year, but was placed on hold by a Texas judge who said, this is probably unconstitutional. Not really sure you can do this. Remember how there's a Customs and Border Patrol that does this just generally for Texas. However, the state did appeal that. So what is SB 4 more specifically? As I mentioned up top, it basically makes it a state crime for migrants to enter Texas illegally. Now, crossing the US-Mexico border is already a crime, but okay, Governor Greg Abbott wants to slap more on top of that. The measure imposes state criminal penalties up to 6 months in jail on non-citizens who illegally enter Texas from Mexico. Anyone accused of re-entering the country illegally could face felony charges and a 10 to 20 year sentence. Lawmakers also empowered state judges to order deportations to Mexico without Mexico's consent. Which seems important, but whatever, Texas. And allowed local law enforcement personnel to carry out those orders. There's a little bit more on that. Mexico has something to say. But again, yesterday, the conservative Supreme Court rejected this emergency application from actually the Biden administration to hold this law. And it said, no, it can go into effect. But then the Fifth Circuit US Court of Appeals put the law back on hold today as they hear oral arguments, which they began hearing today. The Supreme Court's conservative majority didn't explain why they wanted the law to go into effect. In fact, they did not rule on the constitutionality of this law whatsoever. But they just, you know, said, hey, why not? Well, later, we'll do that later. Liberal justices, however, did write a dissenting opinion. Justice Sotomayor wrote, the court gives a green light into a, to a law that will upend the longstanding federal state balance of power and sow chaos. Yeah, I would agree with that and I'll explain why, but here was the Biden administration's and some Democrats' response to that minority ruling.
The Biden administration argues the law would make Texas less safe and will burden law enforcement. And it argues the law infringes on the federal government's authority over immigration.
We know for about 100 years, the states haven't been engaged in this kind of policy, no more than they have been in printing and coining currency. But if you let the states into this area, you open up a Pandora's box, and not just in immigration.
Absolutely. It is a Pandora's box, and especially because there are other states like Iowa who are seeking to enact their own similar legislation, which effectively says, yeah, our state law enforcement can deport and detain those who we believe to be illegally in this country and override whatever Customs and Border Patrol is doing. Again, this is all part of the idea that Customs and Border Patrol somehow doesn't have enough money, even though they have one of the biggest budgets, if not the biggest budget of the federal government. What else does this throw into disarray and chaos? It's a lot of logistical stuff. If every state is enacting its own immigration policy, yeah, a little bit of confusion there. It's unclear, this is from AP, where any migrants ordered to leave might go if the law is ultimately allowed. It calls for them to be sent to ports of entry along the US-Mexico border, even if they're not Mexican citizens. Yeah, why? I mean, I guess that's irrelevant if your main goal is xenophobia. However, Mexico had something to say about it. Mexico's government said Tuesday it would not, under any circumstances, accept the return of any migrants to its territory from the state of Texas. Mexico is not required to accept deportations of anyone except Mexican citizens. On top of that, even Texas law enforcement is like, I don't think this is a good idea. Sheriff Eddie Guerra of Hidalgo County says a lot of local police chiefs here, we don't believe it will survive the constitutional challenge. We have no training whatsoever to determine whether an individual is here in this country legally. But Sheriff Hidalgo, I think you know this maybe better than most people in this country, but we all see what Governor Greg Abbott is doing here. We all see the point of this. It is not to suss out whether someone is here legally or not. This is an effective bounty on anyone who appears to be brown, just an immigrant, doesn't matter. They could be black, they could be Asian. Like, it does not matter. This is effectively a stop and frisk for immigrants broadly. And again, this extends the jurisdiction of what the CBP usually has into wherever in the state. And so it is just a mind F, if I may say so. And again, now it is on hold. Here we have a sheriff saying, I think the Supreme Court will probably declare it unconstitutional, but who knows? And once this happens, or if it happens, like I said, other states may follow suit. But Waz, what do you make of this? It's as if we think the, again, CBP doesn't have enough drones and AI doing its work for it.
I think Governor Abbott is running a play from the Ron DeSantis playbook, which is, you know, be as messy and as sledgehammery as you can with these wedge issues that he knows that, quite honestly, the base of his voters are all for the concept or the idea that, you know, we're quote unquote stopping the rapid flow of people they're calling illegal migrants into the country, which is, you know, it's an obvious dodge. I think the problem is that we don't have a system for processing and, you know, sort of hearing actual legitimate cases of people coming here seeking asylum, seeking visas, seeking work permits, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Instead of dealing with an infrastructural issue that we have for processing folks and dealing with them and letting the requisite people in, it makes a lot of sense to just take a sledgehammer, legislatively anyway, if not in actual practice, and be like, oh, I'm doing something to quote unquote stem the tide.
Right, exactly. And I mean, this all politically takes place in within a framework of discussion that I disagree with, but let's just go with that because this is the politics we've been given. But if Greg Abbott is trying to stick it to Joe Biden and say that Biden isn't doing enough to protect the border, in fact, Joe Biden wanted to pass this bipartisan border bill that, yeah, was sponsored by Republicans and agreed upon by Democrats and does a lot of things that I personally, as a progressive, think are totally abhorrent. And a lot of immigrant rights organizations have said, you can't just shut down the border when the crossings reach a certain number a day. But they balked on that. They decided not to pass that. So who is Greg Abbott sticking this to? Who are the ones who are dragging their feet through the mud? It's Republicans, not Democrats. Democrats, again, way too eager to get in bed with Republicans on doing something probably not good for all of us. And here you have this. And like the idea, again, that law enforcement are now going to be CBP officers, that all police, sheriff's departments, who knows, are going to be CBP officers is, I mean, terrifying if you're a Texan, but also, like this one Sheriff Hidalgo explained, mind-boggling in terms of how that even, what that even looks like. I can only imagine the private detention companies that are licking their chops at the idea that there would be mass sweeps. But then again, we all know that, like, if Donald Trump gets reelected, that's what he wants to do, mass sweeps. And I guess he's going to need agents to do that. Remember, by the way, CBP has 100 miles of operating room from the border, meaning they can stop and arrest you and question you about your papers 100 miles from the US-Mexico border, wild. Again, the law is still on hold, but we will see. It'll likely be back at the Supreme Court. Any final thoughts, Waz, about this? I mean, it truly is like a hey, don't mess with Texas slash we're gonna secede from the union.
Yeah, it has that tinge of sort of outlaw justice, if you will, of these guys taking matters into their own hands. But again, this issue was a little bit bigger than just Texas and the border itself. Because again, these migrants find their ways to other American cities, places like Chicago, places like New York City, which are Democratic strongholds, Democratic Party strongholds. Eric Adams is talking about, hey, look, we don't know if we can handle any more migrants. And, you know, I think Eric Adams is a bit of a lunkhead, but the truth is New York City doesn't actually have an adequate, again, infrastructure to receive these folks and give them a fair shot at figuring out how they go about obtaining their legal documentation and becoming full citizens of this country. Yeah. And so in the meantime, it becomes essentially a free for all, especially in places like New York, which again, some of the worst housing issues in America are happening in New York City right now. And so, the thing is a mess from the rooter to the tutor.
It really is. And like deterrence is not the way. I mean, deterrence, again, just rounding people up and deporting them or making the border even more militarized, in my opinion, is absolutely not the solution. But you're totally right. Processing people, allowing people to return. Part of the reason that folks don't leave is because they're afraid they will never be able to return to potentially work again. People would leave. You would see fewer crossings if that were possible, to say nothing of US foreign policy in places like Haiti, which is currently in shambles and in rampant gang violence as Haitians desperately try to leave and then are summarily turned away to either meet, you know, death or again, or worse. So it's just, again, it is totally rotten. No one's actually addressing root causes here. But let's move on. Hey, speaking of rotten, the sheriff's department in Mississippi. Let's begin with this.
The day of justice has finally come.
That's right.
For the Rankin County Goon Squad.
The Goon Squad, a nickname federal prosecutors say some white former Mississippi law enforcement officers gave themselves for their alleged willingness to use excessive force and not report. Now six of them facing sentencing after pleading guilty to charges in connection with torturing two black men, Michael Jenkins and Eddie Parker, for nearly 2 hours back in January of 2023.
That's right. Three out of six sheriff deputies in Mississippi were finally sentenced after decades of terrorizing the citizens of Rankin County. The straw that seemed to break the back of the camel, I messed that up, you know what I'm saying, was that effective torture of victims Michael Jenkins and Eddie Parker, who were staying with a woman whom Parker was helping to take care of, when a neighbor reported that several black men were at a white woman's house, and that was suspicious. So six officers, all of whom were white, went to that home despite having no probable cause to do so. And according to CNN and the accounts of those victims, for almost 2 hours, a squad of white Mississippi law enforcement officers raided a home without warrants, subjected Michael Jenkins and Andy Parker to racist vitriol, tased them after they'd already been handcuffed, beat them with various objects, and then shot Jenkins in the mouth, leaving him to bleed as they planted a gun on the victims and plotted their cover story. Cute, wonderful. Other things they did were include forced them to strip naked, intimidated them with warning shots, and forced them to be part of a mock execution. So the most terrifying 2 hours of anyone's any life imaginable. Those six officers did get hefty sentences, but there's more. They are Hunter Elward, Christian Deadman, Brett McAlpin, Jeffrey Middleton, Daniel Updike, and Richland police officer Joshua Hatfield. Three of them, Edland, Middleton, and Updike, were part of that goon squad. They named themselves the goon squad. And what did the goon squad do? They absolutely tortured citizens for nearly two decades. Deputies in the Rankin County Sheriff's Department, many of whom called themselves the Goon Squad, would barge into homes in the middle of the night, handcuff people, torture them for information or confessions. In the pursuit of drug arrests, the deputies rammed a stick down one man's throat until he vomited, dripped molten metal onto another man's skin, and held people down and beat them until they were bloody and bruised, according to dozens of people who said they had witnessed or experienced the raids. In fact, many of those people who experienced the raids in these two decades had contacted Sheriff Brian Bailey of Rankin County to complain, only to be ignored. But then it had to be Jenkins and Parker who finally filed a civil rights lawsuit last June for everyone to be taken seriously and to get these guilty pleas. Before I kick it to you, Waz, this is good news. There's actual hefty sentences. The FBI director has called this atrocious and an act of pure hell. Yeah, I'd say. But take a look.
The courtroom filled with emotion at sentencing today. Michael Jenkins' mother, Mary Jenkins, giving a victim impact statement in court, saying in part, "I want the same consideration for these people as they gave my son when they put the gun in his mouth and pulled the trigger." And the parents of one of the convicted deputies, Hunter Elward, also making a statement. "Nothing prepares a parent for this. What happened shouldn't have happened. There are so many more victims than the people in this room. Hunter is going to take and own what he did." And his son did. Hunter Elward stood up and directly addressed the two men he victimized. "I'm so sorry. I don't want to get too personal with you, Michael. There's no telling what you've seen. I'm so sorry that I caused that. I hate myself for it. I hate that I gave you that. I accept all responsibility."
That's not something you hear every day from a sheriff. That was Hunter Elward, 31 years old, sentenced to 20 years in federal by a federal court. Jeffrey Middleton, 46-year-old former sheriff's deputy whom federal prosecutors described as the ringleader of that goon squad. He was sentenced to more than 17 and a half years on Tuesday. They're also ordered to pay $79,500 in restitution to the victims. Updike was sentenced to 17 and a half years. And Christian Deadman was sentenced to 40 years, the maximum sentence for that torture of Michael Jenkins and Eddie Parker. Deadman apparently participated in what was countless missions, I don't know if I would call them missions, and was, quote, not afraid to use excessive force. Despite his relatively young age, one prosecutor said Deadman had the experience not to do what he was doing. He hid behind his badge and gun, and his acts are egregious, serious, and lawless. Yeah, again, the sheriff, still in office, but was 3 of 6 were sentenced. I can't imagine the terror that those two gentlemen went through.
Yeah, I mean, you got to say that's pretty good news. That's nothing to sneeze at. Generally, cops get slapped on the wrist for this type of behavior. You know, they might get fired. They might lose a pension. But rarely, rarely do we ever see these guys get thrown in the pokey for this sort of abhorrent behavior. And, you know, honestly, it flows from the top. Like, I'm glad these guys got pinched and are going to pay the price, but they're betters than their superiors for fostering an atmosphere and a culture where police officers thought it was appropriate to behave in this fashion is insane. And honestly, this is another thing, especially in places like Mississippi, where a lot of the power goes unchecked, right? There is only one party rule. For that, right? Like these people act with an impunity in these communities. There is no check on the actual power. And we know that unchecked power tends to be as corrupt as it gets. So it's no surprising that they brazenly would call themselves a goon squad, right? Yeah. Like that would be their known name for themselves. You know, essentially calling themselves criminals, people that are going out to commit crimes against the citizenry. It's a miracle, honestly, that these guys got caught and are getting their just due in terms of a prison sentence, public ridicule. And I want to give a shout out to that guy's dad for not coming out and doing the typical thing that we see where the parents come out and act like Johnny was just the perfect little boy his whole life. And they just can't believe he did this. The dad came out and said, what this guy did was horrible. I can't believe my son would do this, and he deserves to pay the price.
Yeah, and we're hearing that actually a fourth has been sentenced of the 6, so that's good. I mean, it also should be a signal to other sheriff's departments around this country. I live in LA, and we know that a sheriff's department here in LA County has gangs in it. Just gangs, just all like that relish in torturing people, in killing people, get tattoos when they do so, and celebrate that kind of violence. And we're just supposed to be like, yep, yep, sheriffs and law enforcement, they protect us, things are good. No, man, crime is at an all-time low. They are bored. Are they bored? Is that what's happening right now? Do we need to move funds out of police and sheriff departments? Is that what's happening? But again, like, nobody raises their kid to do something like this, to torture someone, to put a gun in their mouth, to put a stick in their mouth and pour molten lava on their skin. It is the culture of policing that is above, that is completely impugned, right? Like, it's completely above the law. They think they are the law so they can get away with violating the law. That is what it is. And so, like, we don't have enough checks on them. And we celebrate shooting first and asking questions later. And also, you know, it should not be lost on anyone, the race dynamics here. 6 white men in this predominant, I mean, I can only imagine the goon squad. You gotta be white to be part of it, but who knows? And also, like, the origins of policing in general. Hello. But we got to take our first break, if I'm not mistaken. Just wanted to rhyme. But we'll be back. There's more news. Alina Haba's origin story. And yes, and billionaires. Will they come to Donald Trump's rescue? We'll find out. Welcome back to TYT. Francesca Fiorentini, Wozni Lambre. A lot to get to. You know, rarely do we actually hear from lawmakers who are about to have an abortion. We're often hearing from citizens who are getting their rights taken away. But in this case, no. A state senator, take a look.
I don't know how many of you know this, but a few weeks ago I learned that, against all odds, I am pregnant. Now, I wish I could tell you otherwise. But after numerous ultrasounds and blood draws, we have determined that my pregnancy is once again not progressing and is not viable. And once again, I have scheduled an appointment to terminate my pregnancy.
So that woman is Arizona State Senator Ava Birch, who announced to her colleagues, as you can see, that because her pregnancy isn't viable, she is planning to get an abortion. She said that in her speech on the Senate floor, despite knowing that her pregnancy is likely to result in a miscarriage. This is, as she explains, the safest way. She hasn't yet gotten that abortion because of the draconian anti-abortion laws in the state. There's a 15-week ban on abortion in Arizona. She's still within her window. She's 8 weeks pregnant, but there's a lot of hoops she has to jump through before she gets that abortion. Take a listen.
First, I was required to have another ultrasound at the abortion clinic, as all patients seeking abortion are required to do in Arizona. An ultrasound that I absolutely did not need to have. I didn't have an ultrasound because my doctor thought I needed one. I had one because legislation has forced me to do that. An invasive transvaginal ultrasound that I didn't want or need to have, performed by someone who didn't want to have to do it. Then I got to sit through an exhaustive list of absolute disinformation that was read off to me. I was told that there were alternatives to abortion, parenting or adoption among them, as if delivering a healthy baby is an option for me. It is not. And from where I sat, the only reason I had to hear those things was in a cruel and really uninformed attempt by outside forces to shame and coerce and frighten me into making a different decision other than the one that I knew was right for me.
Now, why is Ava Birch, State Senator Ava Birch, explaining what's going on with her? Why is any of this relevant? Well, that's because women's reproductive rights and right to an abortion are being taken away. And in fact, in Arizona, which again already has this 15-week abortion ban, there's another law that forbids abortions for the sole reason of genetic fetal abnormality. And it's still in effect, and it's pending, pending the outcome of an appeal to block it. Again, so it went through, but there's an appeal. So the Arizona Supreme Court is weighing whether to reinstate a near total ban from the year 1864 that would prohibit all abortions except those to save the patient's life and punish doctors who violate that rule with a mandatory 2 to 5 year sentence in prison. So, she's speaking about her fetal abnormality. When the baby does not grow, when you see week to week, there's no growth, there's something wrong. You don't know why exactly 8 weeks is super, super early, but you know there's something wrong. This law, if the appeal doesn't go through, would make it illegal for her to get that abortion, even at 8 weeks. That's why she's speaking out about it. And she explains more here.
I don't think people should have to justify their abortions, but I'm choosing to talk about why I made this decision because I want us to be able to have meaningful conversations about the reality of how the work that we do in this body impacts people in the real world. I don't know how many of you have been unfortunate enough to experience a miscarriage before, but I am not interested in going through it unnecessarily. And right now, the safest and most appropriate treatment for me and the treatment that I choose is abortion. But the laws that this legislature has passed has interfered with my ability to do that, along with countless others.
Exactly. So, and there's a few choice words in there. One of them being, this is what I choose. This is what I choose. It is also the safest, and I don't want to have a miscarriage. What so many women in states like Arizona and red states across this country are being forced to do is wait until they have a miscarriage. And even then, as they are miscarrying or as they are bleeding, they are not able to get abortion care in order to ease that process. And even then, if they have the abortion or if they have the miscarriage, excuse me, they might be accused of having something to do with it, of mishandling remains, as we saw not too long ago. If they like have a miscarriage in a toilet, I mean, it goes on and on and on. But while she's being very, very handholdy, right? She is trying to explain as calmly as she can that this affects everyday people, not just state senators, obviously. She just happens to be one. And can you just empathize with this very human experience? Before I get to you, all the Republicans left while she was speaking. All but one left during her comments. Imagine walking out on someone talking about that. It's
not
insane.
Really that hard to imagine, because the backbone of this law, it's fake empathy for quote unquote the unborn, and just a blatant disregard for the safety, the health, and the well-being of these, you know, pregnant women. There's just no two ways about it. I know we spend a lot of time critiquing Joe Biden and the job that he's done campaigning for himself, proving that he should get to run another term for presidency. But guess what, man? I think he's got a good chance, as good a chance as anyone that the Democrats could throw out there, simply because the Republicans will refuse to stop stepping all over themselves. They will step in it at every single turn. Nobody actually wanted this abortion ban. There's a minority of people in this country, and I would say even a minority of Republicans, who were really gung-ho and abortion ban absolutists. And they got this law when nobody was asking for this. And so because they got it and they pretended to care about this and want this forever, they've gone through with it, and it has hurt them electorally. Mm-hmm. You know, these bloodbaths that they were supposed to give the Democrats in 2022, and other off-year elections, Republicans have been getting wiped off the floor because they continue to support a bunch of policies that simply are not popular with the American people. And this is stuff is just, it borders on inhumane, honestly. The idea that you would tell a woman who's carrying a baby that her doctor and medical professionals have determined is not viable, like she cannot possibly have a viable pregnancy, that she should have to bring that thing to term somehow, is absurd. Rather than this be an issue with her and her doctor, that they figure it out, it's just lunacy on its face. It's absolutely political hell for Republicans, and I can't believe they're still running with this thing.
Oh, I mean, and they're not, right? They're trying to not, and yet every statewide, this is what Republicans are doing. But in Congress, they're like, don't mention that. No, let's not talk about that. Yeah, we got what we wanted, and it's not really turning out. And that's what happens when, like, your theory is put into practice. In theory, life is important. In practice, you're killing women. But hey, you're just a theoretical guy, and you're most likely a guy who's trying to legislate all over the place here. And it's true that I think this is also bringing Democratic women, female legislators who are both Democratic and Republican together, which is very dangerous. But just another thing that has broke just this week is that Louisiana doctors, because of that state's abortion ban, are performing C-sections on women with non-viable pregnancies in order so that it doesn't look like an abortion. C-sections, major abdominal surgery, in order to not do an abortion. This is wild. I mean, talk about cruel, talk about gruesome. This is all of that. But number one, and this is the last thing I'll say, this is an invasion of our privacy, which was the basis of Roe v. Wade to begin with, was all about actually saying, hey, this decision, not up to a judge, not up to a legislator. This decision is about you and your family, between you and your partner, between you and your God. Right? And my God's not your God. Okay? So that is what the foundation of this was. It was totally not medical at all. It was just the right to privacy, and that has been obliterated. So amazing that Ava Birch is speaking out, and others have done so, but we will see. As Waz says, let's see how this hits them in November. But let's get into this. This is some wild, wild dirt. New dirt has come to light in how Alina Haba, who is Trump's current lawyer, got her start representing him. And it is not shaking out in Alina's favor. In fact, if anything, it looks like she's being thrown under the bus in particular. The Daily Beast has this scoop out this week, and it starts, ironically, with another Trump legal settlement around keeping a woman quiet for, in this case, sexual harassment. But for once, not perpetrated by him. So hey, win. What happened? Donald Trump's golf club in Bedminster, New Jersey, paid this week $82,500 to settle a lawsuit alleging that it had silenced a sexually harassed waitress by tricking her into an unfair hush money deal, according to the ex-employee's lawyer. Now, there's the settlement also was worded to leave one Alina Habba vulnerable for her role in doing the tricking. See, the thing is that the waitress was actually tricked by Alina Habba. This waitress's name is Alice Bianco. She was 21 years old at the time. She was being coerced and harassed by her boss to sleep with him. She was friends with Alina Habba, who offered help. So according to Bianco, she feels betrayed by Habba, who is actually one of the people at the Bedminster, who was a Bedminster regular, until her lawsuit says Habba posed as a concerned friend, giving legal advice about how to address alleged sexual harassment by a supervisor, only to abuse that relationship and, quote, fraudulently induce her to quickly agree to unconscionable and illegal terms. In other words, to sign a hush money agreement. You don't talk about this. Here is, in particular, $15,000 and, oh yeah, an NDA. Bianco's lawsuit claims that when they met inside Alina Habba's car, the lawyer tried to temper Bianco's expectations by telling her, you don't want to go public with this. I've been raped. I can help you. I can protect you. Just slime ball stuff. Real slime ball stuff. The ploy, alleged ploy, rapidly paced over just 2 weeks, gave Habba leverage to arrange a hush money deal that would curry favor with the former president and earned her way into his inner circle. Bing, bing! Within a month of working on that August 2021 hush money deal, Habba became Trump's leading lawyer, defending him from a sexual assault defamation case by former Apprentice contestant Summer Zervos, replacing Trump's nationally renowned attorney on that case. That case was then later dropped. And of course, the rest is history with Alina Habba, or for now, has become Trump's faithful attack dog, representing him in the E. Jean Carroll case. The other hush money case that is about to begin. Was, before I go on with this drama, the fact that this was Alina Habba's long con to get into Trump's inner circle, to become his lawyer, is just insane to me.
Yeah, it's a It's a villain origin story as salacious and gross as you'll encounter. And, you know, let's face it, if you're a lawyer, like this woman, being on TV every day, having your face out there on the news as representing Donald Trump, that's a win, a potential windfall that it could potentially be enormous. And that, you know, somebody with very low principle or, you know, character to be like, look, man, I'm gonna do whatever I can to get close to this man so I can get to the bag. I'm not all that surprised, but the details here are pretty freaking sordid. And yeah, talking a rape victim out of, you know, sort of pressing charges and trying to get redemption and justice, I mean, that stuff that you might have to take that out of a movie script. People would be like, that's too cartoonish and evil.
Yeah. And just a reminder of like the kinds of rhetoric that Alina Habba engages in, or who she is in general and what she's been doing. Here's a little mashup.
I've argued presidential immunity, Martha, ad nauseum, because I represent the most targeted former president in American history. Miss James started out asking for $250 million. When she got a glimpse of just how wealthy the Trump Organization is because they're a successful business in the state of New York, because they employ thousands of people and pay hundreds of millions of dollars in taxes to the state of New York.
No, I'm not having any second thoughts about representing President Trump. It is the proudest thing I could ever do. President Trump is leading in the polls, and now we see what you get in New York. So don't get it twisted, whoever asked me that question. I am so proud to stand with President Trump.
Okay, but is President Trump proud to stand with you, Alina? Because it looks like you're in hot water now for your role in this hush money scheme, just like a Donald Trump is in hot water for his role in his hush money scheme. Because there's one line in this new settlement that just came out again between Alice Bianco, the waitress who was sexually harassed, and the Bedminster Golf, Trump's Bedminster Golf Club. I don't even care, but there you go. And that is there's a line that says, quote, the parties agree that Alina Habba is not party to this release. That means, according to the Daily Beast, Habba was specifically cut out of the deal, allowing Bianco to sue her directly for the exact same issues. In other words, Bianco can sue her for fraud, for coaxing her and coercing her into accepting $15,000. By the way, wasn't tax-free. So as soon as Bianco, according to the story, found out that it wasn't tax-free, she was like, what's going on? Text Alina Habba, and Alina's like, sorry, I can't give you advice, because she was working for Donald Trump. And Bianco's lawyer, actual good representation, says, quote, my client is certainly considering suing her, meaning Habba, for fraud. Bianco's lawyer, Nancy Erica Smith, said last week, noting she's already in communication with Habba's lawyer. So it's not looking good. And the fact that, the thing is, Donald Trump and the Bedminster Golf Club have to distance themselves from Alina Habba, and they are. They're saying, oh, this woman, we did not tell her to go tell this woman to just accept some money instead of suing us for sexual harassment. She did this on her own, which, like, arguably could be true. Who knows what's true anymore? But they're being like, nah, she didn't do it for us. We had nothing to do with this. Trump had nothing to do with this. And so Alina Habba, like, she might have gotten the golden job, I guess, if you ask Rudy Giuliani, it's not. But now she's still on the hook. Does that make sense, Waz? Am I sort of explaining that?
Yeah, it sounds like Donald Trump and his crew threw her under the bus at the first opportunity that was convenient for them. This isn't sticking with everything they do. You know, how many guys have had to go to jail? How many guys have had to, you know, if not go to jail, end up snitches and end up being stool pigeons because they were associated with Donald Trump? Like, this is the MO. Donald Trump's not going to take the rap for you. That's not how his relationships work. You get down with Trump world when the stuff hits the, when the stuff hits the fan, you're going to have to bite the bullet, and you're going to go down for the sins of Donald Trump because
and it's a total conflict.
Flows.
No, and it's also a total conflict of interest. Imagine if the Bedminster Golf Club was like, yeah, we told Alina Habba to fraudulently convince this woman to accept a hush money deal. Then who's going to represent Bedminster Golf Club? Alina Habba? Is that who? Like, do you understand the sick little circles and knots that we're in right now? And mind you, with only weeks to go before the potential start of Trump's very first criminal trial, which involves, ironically, yet another hush money payment, Habba is under the microscope for standing by while her other Trump world client committed perjury. She faces potential bar complaints. This is separate, sorry. Potential bar complaints in New York for allowing Alan Weisselberg, the Trump organization's former chief financial officer, to lie in court and in two depositions without correcting the record. So she's messy. The girl's messy all over the place. She's been messy, and now this trial for hush money is about to start, and she's probably going to get sued by this waitress. I mean, it is... It's so tacky. Like, I'm just like, if I read this as some, you know, crappy airplane novel, I'd be like, no, stop, tacky. But good on Alice. I hope that she gets more money, way more money. If there is any money, which we need to go, or we need to take our second break, do we? All right, we're taking a quick break. We're coming back. We're talking about billionaires bailing out Trump. Be right back. Welcome back to TYT, Francesca Fiorentini, Wozni Lambre, and I love this news. It's just so funny to me. We are now in the why won't billionaires bail out Donald Trump, phase of Donald Trump's legal trials? And they might have a good reason. Let's jump into this.
But Kevin O'Leary, I think this is where it's going to go. Now, I was wondering, if he can't get to the Supreme Court, will you loan him the $460 million?
You know,
just to help, in order to protect America's name. Think of it that way.
I love to, but we bought the courts for a reason, so I don't have to. I bought Clarence, so I don't have to do this. So that was Fox News' Larry Kudlow begging Canadian billionaire Kevin O'Leary of Shark Tank to loan Trump money to pay out his $464 million bond, which again is plus the appeal on his civil fraud lawsuit that he lost, that he was, you know, that Judge Engoron slapped on him. Because so far, no insurance company will back this bond. Trump cannot get the money, and he's got 5 days. And I did this story in the AM, so he's got like 4 days now to get this money, and he's freaking out. Here he's bleeding over on True Social. Judge Engoron actually wants me to put up like I have to just read this as a Valley girl, like put up hundreds of millions of dollars for the right to appeal his ridiculous decision. In other words, he's trying to take my appellate rights away from me when I have already won the appellate division, but he refuses to accept their already made decision. Nobody has ever heard of anything like this before. I would be forced to mortgage or sell great assets, perhaps at the fire sale prices. And if and when I win the appeal, they'd be gone. Does that make sense? Ugh, witch hunt, election interference. That just feels more right to me. But basically, yeah, they're gonna come for his assets. If he can't post this bond, Mar-a-Lago, let's go. You know what I'm saying? Like it's on. Obviously Trump is appealing this, but Dennis Phan, who is a lawyer for the state's attorney general office, Letitia James, said in papers sent to the appeals court that, quote, the defendants failed to propose a serious alternative to fully secure the judgment of the money. There's nothing unusual about even billion-dollar judgments being fully bonded on appeal. It's like, it's perfectly normal. Let's pay $1 billion. Hey, I've seen bigger. I mean, that's basically what that letter is saying. It's like, $464 million, that seemed bigger. And I've seen people who pay it. Are you not good for the money? But again, this is sending ripples. Billionaires are freaking out. And right-wing conservatives, here's Mark Levin, who is tweeting, why are there no Republican multi-billionaires offering to lend President Trump the funds to file his appeal in the outrageous case in New York? Are none of them liquid enough to help or join with others to help? This is an outrage. Waz, you caught that? Like, are none of them liquid enough? This is like, wow, I guess you're not really liquid.
It's some reverse psychology nonsense. And honestly, man, if the pandemic proved anything to me is that these rich people aren't as rich as they claim. So many of them went running to the government. So many of them had to take out loans to, you know, make payroll and things of that nature in their various businesses. A lot of you guys don't have a bunch of money in the bank. A lot of it is they're billionaires on paper in terms of the alleged worth of their assets. But they can't just go out and withdraw cash from the bank and be like, here, Donald Trump, here's a bunch of money. And the people who do probably wouldn't want to be seen as doing this in the first place, right? And so I'm sure he will find a way to make this bond. That somebody will come in the 11th hour, and God only knows what strings will come attached to that. Because let's face it, the billionaires and the oligarchs of this country are the only people who seem to be able to get anything out of the government these days. So God only knows what promissory notes Trump has to sign just to get this bread, right? Saying, you know, when I'm in the office, blah, 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 blah. But yeah, I'm sure he'll get the money eventually. But it's just kind of funny to watch these guys publicly beg on behalf of the former president.
I mean, this is a little bit of a let them fight situation, right? Because I actually am of the mind that they should bail him out. Because this is the dude that passed a $2 trillion tax cut that allowed them to write off their $60 million private jets. You owe him. And to your point about the pandemic, I mean, on, like, from a flip side of that, what happened was is that they knew how to take advantage of free money from the government. When all of us rubes were like, I don't know, should I get an LLC? Like, we shoulda, but we didn't get any money. But these fools who were already rich, didn't need the money, got the loans, and they never paid them back. That was thanks to Donald Trump. So these are your buddies. And if he's reelected, he will extend the tax cuts, which expire in 2025. He'll extend them for another however many years. They should bail him out. But if he doesn't win, well, then they're out $464 million. But not every rich person is throwing him under the bus. Hedge fund founder John Paulson is throwing a fundraiser. Cute. I hope, what's his name? Vanilla Ice performs. That'll be chill. Co-chairs of the inaugural leadership dinner in Palm Beach include hedge fund billionaire Robert Mercer. Oh God, that backwash. And his daughter Rebecca, backwash too. Oil tycoon Harold Hamm, hotelier and space entrepreneur Robert Bigelow, and casino mogul Steve Wynn. Yes, also asexual predator Steve Wynn. Never forget, don't stay at that dude's hotel. But he's got cool friends. Anyway, price tag for the dinner, $250,000 to $814,000. Can I just throw this graphic up? Because what about these guys? What about the rubes who put this stand with Trump, fund the $355 million unjust judgment? Can we spare a thought for, I'm sorry, this screenshot is showing that Juan Carlos Chinia donated $20. Man, Juan, you could have used that money for anything, dude. You just happened to got screen grab. My bad. It was just Juan, if you're out there, give me $20.
Tough break.
It's just
some Domino's pizza or something, brother.
Seriously.
Make it a blockbuster night.
Go see Dune 2. Come on. See Dune 2, get a small popcorn. I don't know if you have enough for a large, and don't donate to Donald Trump's legal fund. But anyway, we will see. It's going to be fun to take bets on which billionaire swoops in at the last minute, and then we immediately have to boycott everything that person has touched. Any final words, Waz?
This is just, I just love whenever Trump and money comes up, it just shows how fraudulent the entire concept of this guy being some rich, massive business genius, blah, 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 blah. Yet he can't pay his way out of his own foibles. It's silly.
Yeah. I really hope that this chapter in American history is just silly. Do not read. Silly. Skip. Yeah. Skip to next chapter when things are less silly. Speaking of silly, we really didn't have anything that fun on this rundown in this hour, but hopefully Jordan Yule and Cenk will have something good for you and juicy. I know there's more, but Waz, where can people find you and follow your work?
TheRinger.com. If you have even a passing interest in pop culture, in sports, check us out every day. We're giving you guys new and fresh hot content off the presses. And check out Woke Bros wherever you get your podcasts. Coach Kate called me up, said the team needed me last minute, and I had to come through. So shouts to Coach Kate and the crew.
This is last minute. Well, I'm so glad you were able to join us. Yes, and thank you to Kate and all the producers. And everybody follow me at Franny Fio and listen to The Bituation Room or watch it Tuesdays and Fridays, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern, you know, right in the sweet spot so I don't step on TYT's toes. You know how I'm thoughtful. All right, see you guys next time. More in the second hour.